A serious hole in the net.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The Bernard Madoff fraud case gets more perplexing by the minute. The head of the agency that's supposed to watch this stuff says his people could have and should have caught Madoff a long time ago. Instead, he made off with $50 billion over a decade. Turns out SEC regulators had plenty of warnings about Madoff. Marketplace's Alisa Roth has more.
Chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Christopher Cox, says he's gravely concerned about the agency's behavior in the Madoff scheme. He wants an internal investigation to figure out why the agency didn't chase down tips that something was wrong. It reportedly got wind of the scheme at least 9 years ago. Barbara Roper's in charge of investor protection at the Consumer Federation of America. She's boggled by the apparent missteps at the agency.
I can't offer an explanation for how you would let this particular case slip through the cracks. Like I said, it has red flags all over it.
The SEC is also looking into all contacts between the agency and the Madoff family and firm to see if anything was amiss. Meanwhile, the oil company Royal Dutch Shell is the latest to admit to being duped by Madoff's scheme. The company's Dutch pension fund says it has a $45 million exposure. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
The Federal Reserve has to be thinking, what else can we do? It's poured mountains of cash into the credit markets and cut interest rates to about zero, and still very little to show for it so far. Wall Street responded to yesterday's rate cut, but the markets are back down again this morning. The Dow has lost 53 points in the early going, about 0.5%, to 8870. The NASDAQ is down 11, and the S&P 500 is down 6 points. In Asia, the markets close mostly higher by a fraction. European shares are down a fraction so far. Today, other central banks followed the Fed's lead. Kuwait, Norway, Hong Kong, they all cut interest rates substantially. Japan could be next. Let's bring in our European correspondent, Stephen Beard. Stephen, you've been talking to people. Any sign that all this cutting is doing anything?
Well, the rate at which banks will lend and borrow dollars between themselves, that has come down this morning, but not by enough to indicate the credit crunch is over. Credit is still very tight. There is still a substantial gap between zero and the 1.5% that the banks are lending each other dollars. So there still remains that fear, there's still that lack of trust and a terrific reluctance to lend.
Well, there's no place else to go with interest rates. You can't go beyond zero. So what are people saying might work at this point?
What people here are saying is the only thing that is likely to work now is for Obama to get into power and to really unleash the mother and father of all stimulus packages. They're talking about $1 trillion that he's going to have to throw at the American economy. Then, coupled with these very low interest rates, then perhaps the U.S. and then the global economy will begin to recover.
I'm sure the taxpayers are happy to hear that, Stephen.
Indeed.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, December 17th on Marketplace.org. OPEC met in Algeria today and was expected to call for a cut in production of 2 million barrels a day. That'd be a record. Plus, Russia and other non-OPEC countries have said they will cut production. But oil traders are just kind of shrugging it off. Here's John Dimsdale.
The International Energy Agency predicts world demand for oil will fall this year for the first time since 1983. Even China is using less oil, and with surpluses piling up, oil prices are dropping.
OPEC knows a challenge before them.
Joseph Stanislaw is an oil analyst for Deloitte. He thinks despite calls for bigger cuts from some members, OPEC can successfully engineer a 2 to 2.5% cut in production over the next few months. But he doesn't think Americans will notice much difference.
it's not going to rocket the price back up to $100 a barrel. It may help stabilize it or settle it in some range of between $50 and $60 per barrel. That will do no damage to the U.S. economy.
He says that'll be a comfortable level for American businesses and consumers who'll be paying $1.60 to $2 a gallon at the gas pump for most of 2009. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Word could come today on a major deal involving nuclear power. It's an electric story, an international triangle involving a company that was once on the brink, a European suitor, and Warren Buffett. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
A few months ago, Constellation Energy faced bankruptcy. It jumped at the chance to be bought by Berkshire subsidiary MidAmerican Energy for $4.7 billion. But now that fire sale price seems radioactive. France's EDF is offering to pay twice as much per share for half the company's nuclear operations.
EDF had tried to do some deals with Constellation earlier that they couldn't because of financial constraints as far as getting the funding in the credit markets.
George Van Horn is a senior analyst at the firm Ibis World. He says now the going rate for Constellation is just too good for EDF to pass up.
Nuclear energy itself is just seen generally as much more favorable than it might have been 5 or 10 years ago.
If Constellation backs out of the deal with MidAmerican, that company will get about 10% of Constellation's shares and almost $600 million. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
You might remember the government launched a program this year for homeowners facing foreclosure. The plan was to help 400,000 people. But the Washington Post says so far only 312 people have signed up. Apparently the fees are high and so are the interest rates. The Secretary of Housing and Urban Development tells the Post the program is a failure. Home builders have another idea for the housing market. Here's Rico Galliano.
The National Association of Home Builders says its proposal is simple.
Basically, we're hoping to go back to the future.
That's Jerry Howard, the association's CEO. He says he'd like to see a program like the one Congress implemented during the recession of 74.
And that is a two-part component to reduce the amount of existing inventory. It would not be a stimulus to any home builders. It's more a stimulus to buyers.
Part one, a tax credit for new home buyers, up to $22,000 depending on the region. Part two, for maybe a year, buyers could get a low fixed rate of, say, 3% on a 30-year loan. The government would eat the difference between that and market rates. Jerry Nicholsberg of UCLA's Anderson Forecast says giving buyers a reason to buy isn't a bad idea.
There are qualified buyers who are sitting on the sidelines because they don't know when the bottom is going to be achieved. And, you know, if they're incentivized to come back in, that will start the ball rolling.
But Nicholsberg isn't sure this proposal would do the trick, or if the government has the appetite to help out another industry. I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
This morning, a retail research group changed its forecast for the holiday shopping season. Things will be better than originally expected. Not great, just better. The group pointed to Walmart's domination of Christmas shopping. In the last weekend, Walmart had as many shoppers as JCPenney, Target, Sears, and Toys R Us combined. Commentator Will Wilkinson says people who have the means should do a little shopping this Christmas.
Penny pinching is a time-honored recession tradition. For those who've lost a job, are dealing with reduced hours or wages, or face a real risk of economic pain, it's plain sense to do what it takes to make ends meet in lean times. Cancel showtime, pile on the sweaters, go unto the checkout armed with coupons. When you have to do it, belt tightening's no joke. But gladly, most Americans don't have to, not even in this economy. Most of us won't lose our jobs, won't face a pay cut. Yet we tighten anyway. Dollar-stretching tips circulate even among the most comfortable. But if your paycheck's intact and you're still cutting back, you may be part of the problem. When home values surge, we tend to feel richer and spend a bit more, even if we don't plan to sell the house. Economists call this the wealth effect, and it's got a recessionary flip side. So when our 401ks dive as the economy hits a rough patch, we feel a bit of a pinch and rein in consumption. Even when our incomes and the long-term value of our investments hasn't changed a bit. In short, we don't always look to our personal financial fundamentals when choosing whether to splurge or scrimp. But just as irrational exuberance can keep a speculative bubble afloat, equally irrational anxiety and the ethos of austerity it produces can trap us in the doldrums. So maybe you went a bit crazy during the boom and now is the time to return to financial sanity. Good. But if you were living comfortably and responsibly within your means last year, you probably don't need to cut back now. Of course, none of us is duty-bound to stimulate the economy by snapping up 50-inch plasma screens just because we can afford it. But if you're blessed with good fortune in these hard times, you're not helping anyone if you let frugality chic stop you and yours from having a very Merry Christmas indeed.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. You can find a link to his blog on our website, marketplace.org, and share your opinion with us. If you do cut back on your spending this holiday and you have kids, you may have some explaining to do. Ashley Milne-Tight has more on that.
Joshua Palshikar lives in Oregon City. He knows what he wants for Christmas and what he doesn't.
I'm really flexible with the different types of Monopoly, but other than that, I might be a bit picky about my presents.
In a normal year, his mother Julia and stepfather Michael might be able to indulge that pickiness. Not this year. They've lost a ton of money on the sale of a house. Michael's company is being sold and his job is on the line. They're also struggling with a pile of medical expenses. Julia says Christmas presents aren't a priority.
We're trying to spend, you know, next to no money on Christmas, and we're doing that through bartering, through just cutting back on doing things. We're not traveling this year.
She successfully bartered for several kids' gifts through an ad she posted on Craigslist. Janet Bodner is the author of Raising Money Smart Kids. She says many parents fret too much over how their children will cope with a leaner holiday season.
You have power as a parent, and you can make stick rules that you make for the household, traditions that you want to have in the household. And if you want to say to your kids, you know, this year we just don't have the money to do this, then say it. Don't worry about it.
Julia decided to talk to her kids. She started by reminding them of cutbacks the family had already made.
They're very aware of the fact that we don't have as many cable channels and that we don't have as much money for buying food.
She told them that meant there'd be less money for presents, too. So 8-year-old Joshua is giving his twin sisters some cards Julia found at the back of a closet.
I'm giving them 5 packs each of Belisera cards, and then we're going to make the boxes for them.
He's looking forward to the holidays as usual. Christmases past have been quite memorable.
Sometimes Santa would even leave things on the couch. It's very interesting.
His mother says Santa won't forget them, but presents probably won't overflow onto the couch this year. I'm Ashley Milne-Tight for Marketplace.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.